You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today on the Cooligans, we will be joined by the Derby Days King himself. We're excited to be joined by Ellie Menjum.
No high praise, huh? Just the king himself. It's dope. We talked to him about Derby Days. We talked to him about the danger he's been in. We explained to him a little something about CONCACAF. And also, I explained to him how the Hyundai A-League works in Australia, his home country. That and more today on the Cooligans!
Hi, this is Ashlyn Harris
and Allie Krieger, and you are listening to our best friends and favorite comedians,
the Cooligans, bitch.
Yeah, baby!
Yeah, yeah, we are here, we are back.
It was supposed to be a little muted, was it? Because my neighbor's baby is awake as hell right now.
Okay, nap time is over.
That's right, and we both want milk, son.
Okay, get that lactose ready, mom.
Let's go. You know, your boy wants to start getting regular again. Is everyone else pooping weird during this quarantine?
But anyway, okay.
Look, I'm playing marbles. Who's with me?
Alexis, come on. Aren't there HIPAA laws that you're breaking? Anyway, hello.
Did you say hippo laws? Are you fat shaming me right now, my dude?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Hello, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right, we are the Cooligans. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that host the funniest soccer show that you have ever witnessed. Okay,
we absolutely better be. But it's not just that.
It isn't just that.
It's not just the funniest. It's also the gulliest. Scrat.
That's right. It gets dangerous in quarantine, okay? All right.
I'm coming for that toilet paper, my dude.
Yo, run that scotch, bro.
What you got, paper towel? I'll use it, my dude. Put it in a bag and don't hit the alarm.
Welcome. Welcome to Living Room FC. We are, still home quarantined, as I hope you are as well. And we're all trying to process all of this stuff, as best as possible. And today I'm excited about it because this is the first time I've been excited about quarantine.
Because this is it right here.
The man who is going to be joining us today is a soccer legend? I mean, because I know that will piss off the English mates, the lads out there.
Well, let's say he's a soccer-roo legend, okay?
Okay.
Because even though he's got a slightly English accent right now, the dude's originally from Australia, and you can't see it, but he's seething because I said that. Ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving from Derby Days, the most legendary soccer documentarian of all time. I said it. Put your hands together for the one, the only, Ellie Menjum, everybody.
Ellie.
Hello.
Ellie, what's...
People of America.
This isn't 1965.
Can you hear me out there?
Yeah. We've got them live.
Can they see me?
From satellite TV.
No. As you guys are aware, I'm not very tech savvy, so all of this is new to me. Apologies for the lateness, or I'm sure you'll address everyone and tell them, but...
Well, no, we weren't.
It's a pleasure to be on fire.
We were going to pretend you weren't late. We were just going to go through the show and act like you were.
We were going to pretend you're an upstanding professional. Yeah. But no.
Well, let's get the truth out there. I'm sick of people thinking that.
Yeah. Well, you want to bring down the Ellie Menjum stock.
The expectations, everything. Bring it down.
Yeah. Well, they could see what you look like right now. So the expectations have been lowered, buddy. What happened?
Yes, I'm glad. Yeah,
exactly. Dollar Shave Club didn't make it to England, bro?
Yeah. You look like you're about to rob a candy store. That's what it looked like.
Yeah. If it was open. Yeah.
I didn't know you became a drill rapper during the quarantine. Thank you, Ellie Man.
Okay. Well, is this a roast or a football show? I'm sorry.
Welcome to Cooligans, baby.
Okay. We roast the ones we love. That's all it is.
Instead of heady one, you're hairy
this
one.
This is the only.
Look at that. Nice little pun.
Wow. I'm definitely not sharing this now, am I?
No. Well, we'll cut that out.
Have you written this down? No, no, that was great. That was fucking amazing.
It's all off the dome, my dude. Pretty, you know how this works.
Let's properly introduce Ellie Menjam to, you know, maybe an American audience who does not know his work. Ellie Menjam, you work with Copa 90, and Derby Days is, I think, how most people know you from these incredible, documentaries, these pieces for derbies all over the world. It's a concept people understand. But you are someone who gets in the thick of it, right? You go into, you hang out with these ultras. You hang out with some pretty seedy folk, yeah.
Some sketchy individuals.
Yeah. As you can see,
you do don't that. Talk about Christian that way, dude.
You do that, and there are some of them are like fun and people could be welcoming, but there are some that you are in some real danger. You know, being if we're being honest. So I want to get to know about how that project started and get to know you more as well. But what was the pitch well received when you were like, let's do a Derby Days, and how did it really begin?
Okay, well, that's the very beginning when I won a competition to work for Copa 90 as a one-off in 2013. That was the Confederations Cup, the tournament before the World Cup. So it was in Brazil. It was a one-off job for 5 weeks. You get to go to Brazil. I won that as a competition, and then essentially they were already planning Derby Days. Derby Days wasn't my idea. I mean, Derby Days as a concept has been done many times before by many different people, from BBC to Danny Dyer on ITV and a whole bunch of others.
Danny Dyer?
But they were going to do it again for the YouTube generation.
The dude from Football Factory?
Yeah, Football Factory.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, he went and did Derby. So people had done it before, and Copa were looking to do one for the YouTube generation, a newer modern version. They had another host who was already working for Copa 90, already penciled in. I was just doing the Confederations Cup job. I kind of got word of it. I've always been obsessed with rivalries. And so they had like a bunch of written down. I was trying to get the job, and they were like, no, it's the job's taken. Just fucking concentrate on your first one. And then I thought, okay, well, then I saw what I did instead is I started like going like, yo, if you're going to do Derby Days, though, make sure you go to Noah Chipswich or Heracles Herenveen or, Wydad Racha. And they were like, wait, what was that last one? So like they were like, oh, he actually knows what he's talking about.
Were you
probably
making
more than
it up? Were you just getting like guttural? So, you got to go to Alhamdulillah, and Bob's United. Those are very.
When Hummus FC takes on Labna.
Buddy, you've never been to Sporting Chickpea?
No.
I mean, you don't even know. You don't know anything about football.
luckily, I don't have to make that shit up. But yes, yeah, it worked in my favor. They gave me the gig. The first series was like, as I said, it was like we've developed and gotten better each one and kind of like made it bigger and almost something different. The first series took us to the more famous derbies, your Liverpools, your Romes, your El Clasicos. It was 8 episodes. And the last episode was in Serbia. And because Serbia, the league is so kind of unknown, they were willing to give us on-pitch access, highlights. And it actually, the episode came out and it blew up because basically everyone's already seen a million documentaries on Liverpool, Everton or whatever, Arsenal, Tottenham. So when we did one that wasn't about a derby typically spoken about, at least on YouTube, it went gangbusters. I think it hit like a million in a couple of months or something, while the other ones were hitting 100K maybe. So basically we went, oh shit, people want to see something different. And then we did a second series. We went to Seattle. We went to Sydney. We went to Hungary. Bosnia. Bosnia is another one where they gave us heaps of access. Basically, each time we did one, we got a bit more access, and then the next league would like it and let us do the next one. And then, so that was season one, season two. And then season three, I kind of stepped in and said, I want to be in charge of them. Started with Madrid. They gave me a chance on Madrid. It went really well. And since then, I've kind of directed and produced them and kind of run my own way up. They've just gotten big. So the first two seasons were 10 minutes, 12 minutes, then went 20 minutes for Spain. Then I took it to 20 minutes to Spain, took it to half an hour for Hamburg, and then Buenos Aires went to an hour, and now they're all an hour.
That's amazing.
And so, yeah, that's the series is just basically going to discovering different rivalries. And I think what I like most about it is the fact that we uncover why it's a rivalry. We don't just go, oh, they hate each other because they're from the same city. It's like, let's look into why, whether it's philosophical, I don't know, a religious difference, I don't know, geographical difference, whatever.
Well, I want to talk, dude, you were talking a little bit about Derby Days. When you took over it, visually, I noticed sort of an adjustment, an advancement on how the show was presented. You know, early on, it was just a lot of like, what, flares? Here's a zoom in on a guy who probably has, you know, a criminal record, right? But now it seems like it's different. Like you've taken an approach to it. And my wife actually noticed. She's like, I don't know what you're watching, but this looks like a music video. Like whoever directed this clearly used to work in music. And I think I shot you a text after that, but you had said that that kind of gives you like a bit of an appeal as to that's the appeal you're looking for, right? Is that, talk to us a little bit about sort of what you're looking for when you direct these things.
Actually, yeah, I remember you texting me that. I think you were the first. I always thought that in my head, like, these are basically just big extended music videos. I mean, for me, what often inspires, music inspires images in my head. I don't know if there's something wrong with me, or there definitely is, but.
That's one of the things that's wrong
it's always
with
been
you,
music. It's been. It's always been that music's inspired images. Images haven't really inspired music in me, so maybe that's the way I'm inclined. And so, therefore, I've always just kind of felt that way. And I always, like, whenever I'd go on a trip, I'd download a couple of albums, and, like, I always liked for that music, that new album or that I found to kind of, like, almost, when I thought back to that place, I try and find the music that kind of fit with the settings, whether that can be due to weather or architecture, whatever else is going on, obviously language. So I guess... Yes, that's a good way of looking at the music videos, because they're almost like the music almost kind of directs the way I want the film to look. So it depends on what I'm listening to at the time, which is often the case. That's kind of been hindered now by these new YouTube music and laws. That's why we don't have Buenos Aires Davide's up anymore. But like, yeah, so for instance, Berlin, obviously I was listening to a lot of like EDM, a lot of house music, a lot of kind of German techno, just to like get my head into what it was. Same with Vigo, a lot of industrious kind of Kraftwerk style music. So essentially, I think the way I look at it is, yeah, music is probably the most important thing in the kind of the direction of the film, even aesthetically, even though music's, you know, it's audio, it drives my aesthetics of how I want something to look. Before I did Galicia, which I think was the one that really started to change things, Galicia between Salta de Vigo and Deportivo La Coruña. I was listening to a band called The Blaze, which are huge now, but French Algerian band. My friend, she got me into them, and I remember put on the headphones and I wrote the whole script to the song, to one song, and then we made the film to that song. I had the shots I wanted to that song. It was edited to the first song anyway. And then just that song led me to another song on Explore recommendations, whatever. And the next thing I know, the songs kind of helped tell the tale and it worked really well. And then I've just kind of followed that ever since. So that's kind of it. Yeah, music definitely, I think music's so important. I think shots are important. And you just kind of, if you can merge them together and get a feeling and make it, I really appreciate you, Alexis, and your missus noticing that. But I think what it is for me is like, I want every time you watch one to be like, oh, that was totally different to the other one. If not totally different, there were moments that were different in the way it was driven. It's not just every time, oh, here's two teams, this way they hate each other. Sometimes it'll be like the first 10 minutes will be one team, the next 10 minutes will be the other team. Sometimes it'll be split. It'll be like 1 minute this team, 1 minute that team. It goes back and forth and you're like, oh, okay. It's every one we try and make different. And I think that's what keeps people, what makes the series so popular is the fact that every time you watch it, you're like, there's no cliches in this. It's going to come at you totally different.
Well, it, the way they're going to build it even feels, like even your response to that, you know, that question feels very like deeply Kanye. This is touching. You know, I'm getting, I'm explaining to you my art, but you're not even really going to get it. You know,
Kanye, by the way, not like this new weird one.
You simpletons, let me break it down for you, plebs.
Ellie's like, okay, the music, idiot,
is good.
So things go boom.
No.
I go, oh.
But no, like even that question, that's a fantastic question. Like no one's really asked it to me that way. And very, no one's ever said to me like, oh, it's like a music video. I've always thought that in my head. So yeah.
Apologies. Nah, it's cool. Guys. It feels like a movie because of the English siren.
Yeah, we're not as, you used to hear this in Brooklyn, right?
It sounds a little different. Actually, you hear your gunshots first, then that.
Yeah.
I'm also curious about you, the Derby Days that that kind of, at least the first one, at least that I can vividly remember it blowing my mind, was that the Buenos Aires, the Boca River one. And there was it did feel, it had this sense of a film that you're the lead character of. And a lot of the Derby Days feel this way, where we're watching this protagonist kind of
is like, Ellie gonna die today?
it can be fun. Yeah. I mean, are there any with that one in particular? Was there anything in particular that stood out when it comes to any real sense of danger? You know, because I'll preface this: when we start as comedians being in the football space, you start realizing that some people take this stuff very, very seriously and do not like, you know, two clowns, joking about the
jokes.
About the game that they love. So, immersing yourself in that space, do you ever feel a real sense of danger?
Yeah, 100%. 1,000,000%. Everyone thinks, I mean, Buenos Aires, the Buenos Aires episode, unfortunately, right now on YouTube, it's blocked. If anyone's watching this and going, why can't I find it? We're trying to get it back. But essentially, that is what everyone considers the biggest derby on earth. And it's the number one. Everyone says, "Oh, you got to do it. You got to do it." And my answer is always, I don't like closure. I didn't go to the World Cup final. I had an opportunity for a reason. I don't want to go to the biggest thing. I always like to have that thing as like the you never want to reach, never meet your heroes. You never really want to reach your goals. I don't know. There's something weird and existential for that for me. So I never wanted to do it because I was like, that's the biggest ever. And once I've done that, I can't go backwards. And also, it's so big. How do I even do justice to that derby? And Vice have done a really fantastic documentary on it as well, where they went to those. Obviously, the one we went to was the first ever time they met in the final of the Copa Libertadores, but the first time they met in the semi-final, they met over 2 weekends, and then they met in the league in the middle. They met 3 times. The documentary was perfect. They literally went to the perfect time. They interviewed the head of the blah 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 of La Doce for Boca, and it was the one where they sprayed the, it wasn't perfect, at least if for documentary maker it was perfect. They sprayed the tear gas through the tunnel, the fans. And so it was like, they hit the jackpot. They went to the one you had to go to. And I was like, I'm not going to tell you one that was like, oh yeah, it was that one where they won 2-1. They went to the one where they played they went to 3 games in 1 week, 3 times they met. There was tear gas, there was fights, I was like, if I can't beat that, I'm not making it just to make another one. So we're not doing it, that's it. And I always said the one time I'd do it is if they met in the Copa Libertadores finals. I'll never forget when we saw the draw and they're like, oh, fuck, this could actually happen. And that's when I was like, okay, we go and we make this because no one can top this. We can't top Vices unless we get a final. Oh, we got a final?
Yeah.
And then they almost killed some of the players.
I said then they almost killed some of the
players.
Well, I want you to continue on that, but I also wanted to ask about, because we were talking off air about how you're learning Spanish on Duolingo, which is great. I'm proud of you, buddy. Yeah. But you get to be involved in so many different cultures and learn so much. Like when it comes to preparation and research, how much of it is involved with, do you get someone who speaks the language, talk to them, in the preparation of the dark days? How much of that is involved in learning about the culture and the language and things like that before you actually go to that country?
Yeah, you guys are full of great questions. What I'll often do is I'll often find someone in that city or in that country, and I'll be a kind of like behind the scenes fixer. They'll also probably interview them. The Berlin one, you may notice the guy Kareem who's walking around with us. The cool thing about Copalani having become as big as it is, and especially my show, is there's a kind of person who loves my show is also the kind of person who gets what the show needs, and like they exactly get what you need. You need a bit of culture, but mixed with football and the right contemporary stuff with the right kind of historical stuff, and they get exactly what it is. They get you don't want to do cliches. You really want to find the kind of almost the phrases that define the city. You know, Berlin's one was poor but sexy. I really try to go in on that and like how that's a phrase that only Berliners know. We're bringing it to the mass audience and stuff like that. It's about finding the people who get the show's become luckily big enough that people get what the show's about, and that those people behind the scenes help make it what it is. So, yeah, we'll always have fixers who speak the language. We've got one guy who works at Copalani, Martino. Maybe you guys know him. He speaks 6 languages himself.
That helps, yeah.
So, essentially,
is your fixer Romelu Lukaku?
Yeah.
No, Romelu Lukaku is 9. Nine including dialects. He told me that himself.
Okay. A little name drop.
Yeah.
Well, Sepp Blatter told me, man, if I didn't have that money by noon, he was gonna break my knees.
Oh, you're talking to Sepp Blatter? You're talking to Sepp Blatter? This interview, can we cut this?
That's my dream yet, dude.
Yeah, you know, like one of my favorite things was I can't remember the teams, but this was in Spain.
I think it's Deportivo La Coruña and Celta Vigo.
The cider. Which was the two teams?
Yeah. Oh no, that's the region next door. That's Asturias. So that was
I'm a huge fan of cider. Love it, right? So this part of it, like, great, right? The fact that I can connect to Derby Days, and these are one of my favorite memories of, like, seeing. I didn't know cider was such a big deal in that region, and it makes me want to go.
It's so big. Everyone's got, like, a special pair of shoes because there's just cider.
Yeah,
and they
pour
it like that, and it goes all over the floor. So everyone wears this special thing on their shoes because the floors are so sticky in every restaurant. It's ridiculous. Like, it's not a joke. Like, everyone's restaurant...
They don't have roaches?
...floor is sticky because of the cider.
What happens in the north of Spain, bro? Nah, I can't drop a crumb in Brooklyn without getting a roach. These guys got sticky shoes? I can't deal with it.
Yeah.
When you decide to go somewhere, has there ever been one... I don't know if you want to mention it, but has there ever been sort of a derby where you're like, yo, this is wild boring, like there's nothing about this? And please don't say Seattle, bro. I know you want to bring up MLS. But is there...
I love Seattle, Portland. Man, are you kidding me? I love... No, genuinely, Portland is one of my favorite cities. New York and Portland are probably the only two cities I could live in your country, with all due respect to the rest.
In your country. I like that. For some reason, I was like, it is my country. Good point. The United States of Alexis.
But no, I also love Seattle. I told you about that Cuban sandwich place, man. In Seattle, big up that place. They fucking send their whole stuff.
No, that's great.
But is there ever one where you're like, there's just nothing here, you know?
Yeah. I can say it now that the... which one was that? There was one that it wasn't really our choice to go. It was due to, you know, with all... The Valencia Villarreal wasn't a derby. But we were going there because we had a relationship with Valencia. They're from the same region... But it was early on when we didn't have the money to decide we can go anywhere we want. We kind of needed clubs to give us access to stuff. They said you can be pitch side, and we want to roll up. And we were a young company at the time, and we went, okay, cool, Valencia, Villarreal. And it was 0-0, and no one hated each other. They don't like each other, but Villarreal is still, in context, quite a young team, at least in La Liga. Valencia didn't really care about them. It was Easter. It was like this time last year, this time 5 years ago, we got stuck in a lift in Catholic Spain on Easter. Yeah. I had like a fucking breakdown in this lift because I was like, I'm going to go mad. Like, it was just, I remember having to argue with a journalist, like begging him to give me something. Like, yeah, but like, do you not, town? Like, at least you're not like the town. The people are a bit weird. Like, he's like, I don't really mind. I'm not going to, and I'm like, yeah, fair. But I was just like, oh man. And like, I hated doing that. But there's nothing you can do when you're a young company and it's a new show. You've got to go.
At that point, you have to kind of stoke the flame a little bit. Like, look, I heard Valencia said something about your mother. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you really need to.
Oh, you going to let that happen, though? I didn't even know she got down like that. Like, where'd she learn those moves, dude? You know she didn't have a gag reflex?
Exactly.
Because that's what they saying back then.
You didn't see that Tifo about your
really
abuela?
Story, bro. Obviously, a lot of the fans that watch us also know of Copa 90 because you guys are kind of like epic, right? And you went through a bit of a sort of a shakeup in the past few, and it's everyone kind of knows what's going on. How does a company make money spending millions sending you around the world for YouTube content?
Oh, it's not millions. I don't know what you're... I don't know how much they're paying you guys, but it's not millions. Miles?
How are they making money? You know what I mean? Like, what is it that... How does... I mean, England seems to lead the charge, I think, in sort of validating YouTube content to be, like, at the same level as television. It's starting to happen now in America. What is it that you guys do? What is it that you hope to do? You know what I mean? Like, how does this business advance? Because you're not young anymore. Like, what is the next step for Copa 90?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm my job is telling stories, so I don't really have a role in the. You guys have seen how long it took me to get on this call. Like, there's a reason I'm not.
You might be. You just never get into the meetings. You can't click the button.
Yeah, that's why we're not balling yet. I can't tell you, obviously, like I said, not only is Kopanani still relatively new, YouTube is. The whole concept changes every few years. So what Kopanani is, we're changing and we're growing and we're moving. That's just, I genuinely don't know. And I try and almost stay out of it because it's not really for me to say that. My job is to tell the best long-form stories on the internet, and that's what I delve my world into. So I can't really tell you. I mean, obviously, we had plans for this year, and now, like everyone, that it's just like, I don't even know what's, no one knows what's going on in the football world. So I don't even know. I was stacking up the research on Athletic Bilbao versus Real Sociedad because they're about to meet in the cup final for the first time in 88 years or something. They were going to play. So I was like, that was my plans for this next few months. Sorry, that story, essentially that's probably not going to happen. If it does, it'll be in August and probably no fans. So I don't know. Like, Klopp's always trying to work shit out. Going to the first part of the question, how do we afford to send me? Well, Derby Days, as I said, it doesn't actually make money because we put it out for free. It is quite expensive. The overhead's quite expensive. Flights, accommodation, and just making things happen costs money. But I think they see the value in it in terms of, you know, for the brand, it's really good. Everyone associates Kopanani with a show like Derby Days. And then we've got other branded work and a whole bunch of other stuff we do through the football business world to make money, but again, that's not really my world. Like I said, we do a lot of commercial work as well that's separate, but what's really cool and what I'm really privileged about is the fact that Kopanani let me do my stuff with no brands, no nothing. I do my work, make my documentaries, and they allow me to do it the way I want to do it. So yeah. I'm pretty lucky like that. But for now, the plan going ahead?
Yeah, it would change the entire tone if you're just like holding flare and a Pepsi. You know? Yeah.
You're like, yo, this Derby's crazy, but not as crazy as the discount that you can get. What? Well, that was a clean tackle. Yeah, speaking of clean, exactly. Head and shoulders. I mean, what a.
Am I right?
What happened to Ellie? Exactly. Dude? Just.
I mean, there's been times like one thing I can always say, we'd never do branded stuff, but we do use like what we can. Like, we've done a few commercials for Amstel, and like everyone's like, how did you get pitch side at the Copa Libertadores? And we're like, because everyone just thinks like CONMEBOL did not know who we are. Like, those shots of me running around the inside of the stadium, like walking into rooms and like popping my head over into like groups of suits, like all. We were not meant to be there. They were literally constantly going like, who are you? What are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm from Australia. They'd be like, what? Why is a brown Australian like running around the bowls of the Bombonera or the Monumental? And essentially what had happened was, because we've done work with Amstel, we kind of teamed up a photography shoot with Amstel, which also got us to be on the pitch for the first 10 minutes of both halves. And then we ended up just taking advantage of that because South America's everything's so shambolic. And long story short, we got there. But the one thing we did do is there was, like, you might remember it in the Buenos Aires episode, there's a bunch of guys. They just wouldn't do it. There were a bunch of, like, hood rats, shirtless, covered in tattoos, smoking outside this liquor store. And one of them had a river tattoo. I'm like, we got it. We didn't have enough river at that time. And I'm like, we need to interview them. And they're like, no, we're not doing an interview. And then I was like, I will give you some money. They're like, no, we're good. And then I was like, well, I just kept pushing them. And like 10 minutes in, one of my producers was like, dude, give up. They're not going to do it. I'm like, I'll buy you a case of beer each if you do a 2-minute interview. Because we've done like, we'll blow your faces, da, da, da. And they're like, a case, you're going to walk in there and buy us a case each. There were 6 of them. And I was like, yeah. So we came in and bought 6 cases of Amstel to like make Amstel feel better. And they were just like, fucking. And then they went mad. The interview was amazing. They play a massive part of it. And it's just like, there's little moments you can work out things, but that's about as.
That's pretty dope. We got more with Ellie when we get back. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. We just want to bring you with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you, and maybe even Ali Krieger.
Correct. Yes, Gully Squad has been litter than ever.
It was wild litty. In fact, some of us, people came in and said, hey, we heard you were having a party. You're going to get a ticket because of coronavirus. I said, no. It's just Gully Squad. They said, all right, well, then please continue. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Okay. And then I tipped my cap to the officer. Gully Squad has been
again, especially during this quarantine, we've spoken about how it is more than just just getting some extra content. It is becoming a very much a full-fledged community of people sharing ideas, sharing stories of comedy, everything. So yes, you may have heard recently we did the first Gully Squad happy hour, and that wasn't even us. That was just the Gully Squad members putting that together. Shout out to Peter Garcia who had the idea initially, and
he wanted to get drunk with other members and let's go, you know.
Yeah,
and let me
yeah.
tell you something. I think it started around what, 6 p.m. It started at 6 p.m.
Yeah,
I logged back in at like 11:30 and it was still happening,
dude. Bro, that's how we do it. Gully Squad, bro.
Gully Squad. It ain't called Softy Squad, my guy.
Okay.
Also, how did you know my nickname in high school?
Yeah, that's the Mr. Softy truck subscriber service.
Actually, I got it after prom. It was a really, the first time drinking whiskey, it was a lot.
Yeah, you know what? I hate that it stuck, I'll be honest. Yeah. No, but if you wanna, yes, the Gully Squad happy hour was unbelievable, and we had a special guest join us, Ali Krieger of the Orlando Pride and the U.S. Women's National Team, two-time World Cup champion, just hopping in Zoom calls with us.
Christian, how many other podcast fan group Zoom happy hours do you think two-time World Cup winners be hopping into, or someone on the cover of People Magazine?
I'm rifling through all my paperwork. You hear it, right?
Okay.
I'm trying to get through it. I honestly cannot find anything. I have the records.
I'm trying to add it up right now, and you can hear my calculator with the paper. You can hear it going. Ding. There it is. And look, it says zero. The number is zero. So you can stop rifling through all your paperwork with your what are the printer with the that all the paper was like court,
the
like
dot attached? Matrix. Yes. Dot matrix.
Yes, your dot matrix paper. You can stop looking at it, dude.
No, but I love. I can't let it go.
No, keep it for sure. Keep it because you need the records for 7 years for tax reasons. What I'm saying is you can stop rifling through it for this.
Okay. We'll get through this break then.
Yeah.
Look, that those are some of the things that are possible if you join Gully Squad. There's a lot of fun. Not only is just cool content, but fun surprises like that. And we are actively trying to make it more than just just sending you an extra 20 minutes of a podcast a week or a month or whatever. We're trying to like offer Gully Squad members a genuinely fun experience, similarly to what we get to have. We're trying to put out something really, really fun and cool. And it's
all the stuff we would have wanted when we were just soccer fans and didn't have a podcast or a TV show.
Totally.
Like, this is what I would have loved to have been hanging out on some, conference call or something like that. And all of a sudden a two-time World Cup winner just hops on from, her backyard, just hanging out.
Sure. It would have been nice if Ronaldinho would have called from prison.
From prison, dude. Imagine we were his only phone call. Yo, how lit is that, dude? He's like, I ain't even trying to get out, dog. I just want to say what was good. I just made this phone call to say what's good.
I don't need to talk to no lawyers. Get the Gully Squad on the phone.
Ew, dog. What are my lawyers going to do? I did this shit.
All right, so please join Gully Squad. Go to soccercooligans.com and hit the Join Gully Squad button. I promise you, it is as fun as these breaks. We have a good time with it, and you'll have unique experiences and really cool things, and you'll help the show grow. So please do that. Soccercooligans.com and click on Join Gully Squad.
All right, baby, we're back. We got even more with Ellie Menjem of Copa 90. Derby days, my Instagram. You've seen them everywhere. we actually never finished talking a little bit about the question about danger and whether you feel like you're in danger sometimes, or just like what were some of the more dangerous situations you've been put in. But I kind of want to ask that and then segue from that into what do you hope to do next? Like, is it just continue doing Derby days, or do you have like a vision for a project that you're really hoping to get into when football comes back / soccer? Because this is America.
That's fair. Going back to the danger thing, yeah, many times, probably every episode we've done, there's been some kind of worry somewhere, especially when you add in Europe and politics and how that's kind of blended into football. It's always been part of it, but really more than ever, and looking the way I do, even though the beard usually isn't this big, there's always a constant fear and there's always a threat. Like, we've had many things that we've been close to quite a few times. Whether I want to keep doing it, I guess so. If you're going to go out, you might as well go out with a flirt of the face. But what do I want to do? I guess, again, everything's been thrown up in the air because of what's happened. The last, obviously, we did the last Derby Day series that took 6 months to do the three episodes. I was hoping to do another three at the end of the year for, like, kind of cup finals and stuff like that, as we're saying, the bus derby. That's not going to happen. But in the future, I don't know, man. Like, I've... Football's never really been the number one thing I always wanted to do. Just general news documentaries in a kind of what I'd like to do going into the future eventually. But I'm kind of loving it, man. Derby Days is going better than ever, so more Derby Days, more. I want to do one more series of The Real International Break. I'm not sure if you guys have seen that. That's actually probably my favourite show, where I go for a World Cup qualifier every break. We went to a different continent. We did the first season we did in one season we did. CONCACAF, we did Costa Rica, Mexico, and US. We did Ivory Coast for Africa. I did Argentina. I did Japan. I did Australia. And we did Bosnia and Montenegro. And, like, it was every episode was like just something insane happened. The Argentina episode is probably one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. If you watch anything of ours besides Derby Days, watch that one. So I'd really like to do another international break qualifying series. I really want to document, again, if this all calms down, I'd really like to follow Canada for this upcoming qualifying series, because I think it's a really fascinating story, just how they can't seem to qualify despite the fact that they should be a mid-level nation, let alone top-level nation in CONCACAF, and they can't even beat El Salvador to make it to the head.
Yeah, so you did. There was a podcast that you did that Montreal. You were talking about that got shared a lot. About your thoughts. Yeah. Yeah, your thoughts on Canada, and it was interesting because even it started making me think about why Canada struggles so much, and it made me ask, it made me think about what is the perception of CONCACAF from your research or what you sense in Europe of what do people know about it? Do they really know how dirty it is? Do you know how these games are a little different than some of the other confederations?
Americans like to say chippy. They're a little chippy. That means there's a lot of elbows and gets a little grimy out here.
Sounds quite British, actually. Chippy. Most people, it's quite funny, you know, they like to laugh at, I find it quite funny that in Europe, they like to laugh at people outside of Europe because they don't know anything about football. But you ask most Europeans, they don't even know the difference between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. And then they think it's one big region. It's quite ironic that. So I'd say your first level, second level even they don't know. The third level kind of know CONCACAF isn't CONMEBOL, but they don't actually know which one's which. And then there's the kind of the ones who really are on their stuff who actually get it and understand it. I'd probably say, though, the first thing CONCACAF is famous for is how shady it was and how it was the center of a FIFA Gate scandal. Through,
that was us, baby.
You guys were two-thirds of the dude. Cases came
yeah,
from
dude.
CONCACAF.
Who else is going to have an apartment for cats?
Us. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. There's some dodgy European countries, but I know what you mean. You guys, if there was a World Cup for... I don't know.
We win. Hey, put a star above our prison prison uniform, dude.
Yeah. I do think a lot of people find it confusing, though, as well, because, the vast majority of central of CONCACAF is Spanish-speaking, but America seemed to dominate the most, maybe with a bit of Mexico, but a lot of people kind of get lost in what's CONCACAF. I struggle, Suriname, I believe that's how you pronounce it. That's a country that sits on the continent of South America, but it plays in CONCACAF. It's quite interesting that no one really ever thinks of that. And I'm always like, wait, why aren't they in? And, you're hearing more and more rumors as 2026 approaches. We're going to have 48 teams. It's going to ruin the whole qualifying process, which is a shame. Obviously, you guys are going to have to qualify even though you're hosts, because you can't have three countries go automatically into it. But I've heard rumors that they're going to make CONCACAF and CONMEBOL merge. And instead of, three and a half spots from CONCACAF and four and a half from CONMEBOL, they'll merge them into, let's say, 10 spots, and everyone, and that most likely South America will just get to take more from CONCACAF, because let's be honest, Honduras are probably going to lose out to even Peru, Uruguay, Paraguay, they are just stronger. It might even make America's job harder, but it'll probably make you better in the long run. I've heard rumors of that. I actually think that would make most sense to merge them because I think everyone would get a lot better for it. I'd love, like, imagine an away day, USA away day. Your biggest match in the qualifiers is always Mexico. But imagine if Brazil away, 4 points.
If you're Brazilian, it'd be amazing. And it'd be winning position. We were talking a little bit about combining CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. You know, that always kind of scares Americans because it's like, even with the relative ease we have now, we still didn't qualify for the last World Cup. You know what I mean? Like, it's, oh, so we're going to bring in tougher competition? Yeah, that seems smart. You know, like, for right now, like, how about this? How about we don't have to qualify? Have we thought about that? You know, like, that's what we're kind of going towards. Like, what is it, like, what do you think it's going to take for, because you've kind of waxed poetically a little bit about the Canadian team, but what's it going to take for the American team, do you think, from your perspective, to get to the next level? Is this something you've ever considered? Do you care? You know?
No, I do. I used to be obsessed with the American team. I famously put a stupid amount of money on America for the three tournaments, 14, 10, and 6. I always thought it was inevitable that you guys were going to win it because just because the way you guys do things, like whether it's through military or financially, you guys just kind of go and just dominate whatever you want. Often succeeding. So I always thought it's a matter of time before Americans work out, oh, this is what the whole world loves. We're going to win this too. And what I don't actually know, have the answer, because what I always go to, like, Americans love, everyone in football loves going about projects and, oh, we're going to build this and this, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is, and everyone forgets this, the United States made the quarterfinals of the World Cup in 2002 when the MLS was in its infancy. No one cared about the sport. Most Americans couldn't even name the squad. You had no investment, no football culture. Well, actually, you had a football culture, sorry, but, like, it wasn't, it was very niche. And yet you made the quarterfinals, of which you lost to a really good German side, 1-0, but there was a ball on the line that got cleared and a dodgy pet. You should have gone to the semis, or you could have easily have gone to the semis. You haven't got close to a quarterfinal. You made round of 16 and what, 14 and 10. Both, you're pretty plucky. To be fair, you got out of the group stage of a hard group in 2014. But if you actually look at it, it's like, wait, America did best when no one gave a shit. Like, you guys were, you beat Mexico in the round
of 16. Yeah, the fifth game.
That hurts them. You would have, yeah, exactly. You will you will never beat Mexico in a World Cup for 20 years, yet when no one cared, you guys did quite well. So if I'm honest, and this is how I feel about the whole thing, it's like, I don't have a clue, but I don't think anyone has a clue. Football's quite weird. I think you've got more players than ever in Europe. Pulisic.
Weston McKennie.
Schalke, I always forget his name.
Yeah,
Weston McKennie, Reyna. It's exciting. Like, I don't actually know what it's going to take. Like, I definitely think Berhalter probably isn't the best, but I don't actually know what the answer is because I find it all... I don't know what the... I thought... old mate who's the Revs now, Bruce Arena. Bruce Arena is the guy who took them to the quarters, so I thought him coming back would go well. And you even watched that. Like, I've watched that Trinidad and Tobago game so many times. Like, it's so bizarre that you lost that game. I mean, the goals were... I don't know. The truth is, I don't know, but, like, I don't think anyone does, and I think you're just going to have to ride it out. Keep doing what you're doing. The MLS has never been more popular. You're creating more plays than ever. The game's never been more popular. I don't think there's an exact formula that goes, okay, we get to go to the World Cup. Because you were making every World Cup... 1994, 98, you were making them easy. All of a sudden, you missed out on one. But can you really blame the football or soccer in America at the moment? Because, to be honest, it's never been better and more popular. Maybe it's not working for the national team, but, like, I don't know, there's not, like, this magic formula that goes, okay, you'll always make it. And, like I said, I always go back to 02, where I'm like, how were they so good then? When Do you get what I'm saying?
Maybe
everyone else thought.
Yeah, maybe they're just the added level of attention and pressure. Even though the popularity of the sport is relative here, it's not, you know, it's not the preeminent sport, but the fact that just more people, like, kids are growing up, a lot of the players now grew up with MLS. You know, that was the only really league they focused on, and then maybe later on they paid attention to the European leagues, but they're growing up with it more now, and maybe that is the thing that's missing from that 2002 squad, which is, like, they always had to defend the fact that they were taking the sport seriously. It meant more to them because it wasn't as popular.
We got something similar in Australia where, like, the game's never been more popular in Australia. The league's never been more professional. It's kind of plateaued now a bit. But, like, when the league was at its best, probably around 2010, our 2010 or even 2014 teams weren't as good as 2006 or even the 2002 team that didn't even make the World Cup. And it's because a lot of people attribute it to the fact that so many players had to go to Europe early, 15, 16, and make it there because the league wasn't strong enough. And so whilst they make the A-League now, the A-League isn't as strong as Europe. So therefore, whilst they've got a safer, more professional better shiny looking league. It's actually doing it tough in the second divisions of Germany that actually makes the players better in all, that made our 0206 squad so good. Like our 0-2 and 0-6 squads are we don't have one player at the moment to get into either of those squads. Yet our league's way more professional.
Yeah, you guys had Everton legend
Tim Cahill.
Timmy Cahill.
Yeah, Tim Cahill. Exactly. He gets it. So maybe that's it. Maybe the problem is that players aren't risking it to go play for, I don't know, Hansa Rostock or IOK Stockholm. Instead, they're going to Houston Dynamo, making a sweet package. No, and that's not disrespect to Houston Dynamo, amazing stadium, amazing place to play. But like, maybe it's just not as challenging. Maybe you just need to get tough out in the smaller leagues in Europe than the big league in America. Maybe,
you sound like Jurgen Klinsmann.
Tough it out, says Ellie Mendrum. You were talking a little bit about A-League. You're obviously a big fan, Australian dude. There were some rumors coming out that Hyundai was going to leave and that might mean, or they wouldn't be the main sponsor. That might mean that the league was going to maybe collapse or shut down. The clubs aren't making as much money, or it's still not where it's supposed to be. What is that? I feel like in order for countries like America or Australia to hit the next level, they need to have a robust league. And if the league collapses, it's not going to get a chance to be robust. What do you know? Is there anything you can report? How do you think it's going on over back home?
You've done your research. I wasn't expecting A-League questions, let alone A-League sponsorship questions. What does the A-League need to do genuinely to be successful? There's one very simple answer. It needs the MLS to go bust, because basically the MLS is just what the A-League wants to be, with a country with 10 times bigger population, 10 times bigger investment, 10 times more money, 10 times more teams. We can't get this. We should have got Kaká. We were meant to get him, but Orlando jumped in because they can offer him 10 times. We've only got 3 major cities, 5 proper cities max. You guys have got, how many teams you got now? You got 23 teams.
We're like a 26. We're about 18 different cities, 26 something currently, like. I think.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, the reality is, you've got Europe, that's like the center of the footballing world, and you've got these little outposts, but places outside of that that are getting bigger and bigger. The MLS now is the go-to that everyone talks about. The A-League and the MLS were kind of like on the same path about 15 years ago, but we don't have enough cities. We've just done 2 expansion teams and they're a joke, and it's not their fault, but we don't have the money to... We got like 3 major clubs, 2 in Sydney and 1 in Melbourne. That's it, and none of them can offer the money that even like I said, Orlando can offer. Orlando's not even a major team. They haven't even made a playoff, and they've got Kaká and Nani. I mean... It's insane if you think about it. Even like great examples like New York City FC, like they gave Melbourne City the scraps. We got David Villa, we meant to have him for 6 weeks. We got him for 2 because like nah, he's going back to New York. Even though he did say he loved Melbourne, but the point is like the A League's in trouble for a bunch of reasons. But I don't blame it on anything other than the circumstances. The A League is a league in a country with 4 other major sports. Each have a league, or 3 out of those 4 have a league that's been going for over 40, 50, 60, the AFL even 110 years. And they're up against 4 other codes, their own code. They've got 30 other leagues that have got 10 times the money, glory, prestige, history, finances from Europe, let alone America, South America, Africa. Then Asia's got more money than everyone. Like, everyone likes to have a go at the A-League, but the A-League's doing the best it can in the circumstances it can. I mean, Neymar's transfer is worth more than the entire sport industry in Australia alone, of every sport. And people want us to be, and people try and compare the A-League to Europe. It's like, well, how are they meant to do that? Let alone how are they meant to be the best thing outside of Europe when the MLS has never been more popular with people like Beckham investing? The fact of the matter is, there isn't an answer. Everyone who loves football in Australia has to support the A-League for it to be good. Stop comparing it to Europe. Otherwise, there's just no option, because it can't be better. You can't be better than... It can't even come close, but yet we have to accept it doesn't need to be as close. It can be it's our own local niche thing. But to do that, one thing we need to do is have soccer-specific stadiums, as you guys like to call them. That'll make a huge difference. We got them for about half the league, but we need it for the other half. And the other thing is we need to like stop trying to be... We need to kind of like take pride in our Australian kind of colloquialism. Be our own unique angle. We don't have to be glossy. We don't need to play in big, shiny stadiums. If they're in suburban stadiums, that's cool. That's what's going to make it cool. Not trying to be a Juventus or even a New York City FC.
Kind of like the Canadian Premier League.
Again, like... Exactly. This guy. Yeah. He's got it.
Well, like, well, well what you're saying,
like, you get down there.
But the stuff that you're saying is really the stuff when we started the, you know, the podcast before it became a TV show, we were saying the same exact thing. We were just saying, like, we have to own what we are. We don't have to be Europe. Well, you know, we don't have to constantly battle with, you know, you write the word soccer on Twitter and all these mates from London are like, it's called football, mate. You know, it's just like that. It's like, who cares? Like, fine. You want to have that debate. You want to have that argument. We're wasting our time.
Yeah, we ain't trying to be you, bruh.
I'm a massive advocate for the world football myself. But in America, you're right. That is your thing, and you've got that word. And that is the federation's even called U.S. Soccer, like, for a reason. Yeah, you're right. You should just embrace who you are. And I agree. It's complicated. Football, man, like everything. It used to be not like everything. But everyone's got an opinion on it now. So everyone thinks that they're right. I'm not even saying I'm right. I'm saying that's my take on it. If people could get along a lot more. In the Australian football world's like, it's so political. Everyone's so
politics fierce. And soccer. And, what are the odds, huh?
All right. That is a wrap. As you can see, we're having a great time during our breaks. Thank you again, Ellie Benjamin, for joining us. We appreciate you. Is there any place people should follow you or any projects that you would like to direct them to at the moment?
Yeah, check out Derby Days on YouTube or Real International Break on YouTube. And I don't know, you can send me some questions on Twitter. I'm there probably a bit too much. At El Menjum.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you guys. Yeah, if not, just...
yeah, we'll direct them to you. So thank you again for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe to the Football Sports YouTube channel for full episodes. You can get those there as well. So again, thank you so much, Ellie, for joining us. So for Ellie Menjum, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!
Cooligans! Oh!